This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome to another episode of Speak Up, Effective Communication, the show on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network focused on elevating your communication and leadership skills. I'm your host, Craig O'Neill, and in our episode today, I've done some research and we're going back and we are talking about necessary fallibility. The title of this episode is From the Ashes of Failure, The Checklist is Born, or The Checklist is Implemented. Let's go back a little ways, and I want to take you to October 30th, 1935, when Boeing rolled out a prototype aircraft at Wright Field in Dayton, Ohio. It was called the Model 299, and it was the largest and most advanced bomber anyone had ever flown. Four engines instead of two, and systems upon systems. A group of Army brass came out to watch it fly. It took off. It climbed about 300 feet. It stalled, and it crashed. Now, fast forward 78 years to 2013, and it's my 30th birthday, and I am taxiing as a passenger to runway 8 left in Grand Rapids International Airport in that same aircraft type. But it's now known as the iconic B-17 Flying Fortress. I was in aluminum overcast, was the one I was riding in. And I was grinning ear to ear as we heard those four 1,200 horsepower engines roar to life. We climbed seconds after climbing, after just a few hundred feet. We get the signal to get up out of our seat so we can start moving about the aircraft. I crossed that bomb bay catwalk to stand right behind the pilots and waited for the go-ahead to climb down into the nose cone of this marvelous machine that has fed a love of aviation since I was old enough to remember. Best birthday ever. Along with the passengers on that flight, we had a tremendous opportunity to stand at each position of the fortress while flying, except for, of course, the ball turret or tail gunner positions on this flight. But look, it's amazing to consider the B-17 almost never got built because of what happened on that day in October 30th, 1935. And it's more amazing to understand why. This particular story was referenced in a book that I had just been referred to by my uncle. The book, and I'm holding it up now for you, the viewing on YouTube, is The Checklist Manifesto, How to Get Things Right by Atul Gawande. I want to talk more about the impact that this book has had on me and how it's altered my entire approach to auto repair facility processes. I'm going to need a few episodes to do this, so let's begin. But first and foremost, we have our word of the day today, and that word is ineptitude. We'll define that word for you after we hear a word from our sponsors who make this show possible. Autoflow is your partner in technology. With Autoflow, enhance your client interactions in a single thread before, during, and after the visit. To see how Autoflow makes it simple, visit autoflow.com. Your trusted companion, Shop Dog Marketing, is right by your side, attracting the best customers and building long-term growth. Call Shop Dog Marketing today or visit shopdogmarketing.com. Supercharge your auto shop with Inbound, AI-powered communication analytics and phone service for your professional shops. Visit callinbound.com. Want a more profitable shop? Start with your service advisor. They are the face of your business, the voice on the phone, and the key to every approved repair. ServiceAdvisorTraining.com is dedicated to giving them the tools and training they deserve. We are back, and our word of the day is ineptitude, and that is a noun that enters the English language in the 1610s. It's borrowed from the French. It's coming from the Latin ineptudo. And the Latin word, I think this is interesting, so bear with me. The Latin word's built on ineptus, meaning unsuitable or absurd. And Ineptus itself breaks down further with in, meaning not, and aptus, meaning fit or apt or suitable. So at the root, ineptitude doesn't mean stupid, and it doesn't mean unskilled. It means not fitted to the moment. So let's take it as an example in the shop. A technician who skips a torque check isn't unskilled in that specific moment under that specific pressure. They simply weren't fitted to that what that moment required. The knowledge is there. The fit was not. So I like that this word doesn't really let anyone off the hook, and it doesn't put anyone on trial at the same time. It's not an insulting description of a person. It's a diagnosis of a behavior in a moment. Now, let's get back into the aviation spot here. Our loyal listeners know I love spending time in this topic. I spent time as a student pilot in 2022 and 23. I grew up with aviation, dad and grandpa both being private pilots. We had a Cessna 182. In 22 and 23, I had the opportunity to do some flight lessons. My flight instructor, Austin Brumfeld, really was just the perfect fit for me. He's on his way to be a mission pilot, proved himself to be a remarkable CFI because his mindset for safety, his ability to teach about flying, just reinforced for me the importance of checklists and lots of things. We talk about this in episode 034, and I also talked to his wife, Evangela, on episode 042. And this topic's fresh in my mind because a few nights ago, literally this week, my wife and I did get to enjoy a nice sushi dinner with Austin and Evangela. It's a farewell dinner as they are about to leave Michigan for their mission with Arctic Barnabas. This month, they are going to be going and moving to Alaska, and we are thrilled for them. And I, for one, am looking forward to an opportunity to go on a bush flight mission with Austin sometime in the near future. So do check out those episodes, learn more about that mission there. But let's go back now to that Model 299 story. And this is just a fascinating piece of history, and it's going to tie together for you, and it's going to help you see where I'm going next. And I think this is just such a powerful origin story. The weeks before that crash, Boeing's chief test pilot, Leslie Tower, he had flown the very same aircraft nonstop from Seattle to Wright Field in Ohio. That's 2,100 miles in 9 hours and 3 minutes. And back then, wow, that was making headlines. This wasn't some unproven, untested plane either. It had already shown itself at that point to be extraordinary. So when the Model 299 rolled down the field on that fateful morning later in October, that morning with Major Ployer Peter Hill at the controls, he's an experienced, highly respected Army test pilot. The plane lifted from the ground at about 74 miles an hour with the attitude a little bit low on the tail. This was an early trouble sign for those that were observing from the ground. As it climbed, the nose kept rising. It was too high. The knowledgeable men on the ground really picked up on that immediately. Two officers who knew exactly what a normal climb looked like started even running toward the runway before the airplane even reached 300 feet. But at 300 feet, it stalled. Left wing dropped, and the Model 299 fell out of the sky, struck the ground on that same left wing first. And that was fortunate because that impact from the wing first likely did cushion the fall enough for anyone at all to survive on the plane. And several people did. And then it caught fire. Four men crawled out of that wreckage. Hill, the pilot, did, neither did Leslie Tower, but they were recovered from the plane before it burned and initially survived. Later on, they died of their injuries. The investigation that followed on this boiled down to pretty much one step. And this is kind of a merciful piece of the investigation. Even in the fire, the tail section of the aircraft survived. So it was easily confirmed. Hill, the pilot, had forgotten to release what's called a gust lock on the tail. And a newspaper covering this crash simply called it too much airplane for one man to fly. Those gust locks are on there so that it can protect the control surfaces from high winds while the plane is essentially parked. And it was just forgotten. Obviously, when the crash happened, the Army almost canceled the whole program right there. But in fact, the brass that was out there to watch this demonstration ended up awarding an initial contract to another manufacturer for a plane that was later called the B-18 Bolo, a two-engine plane. Didn't carry much, wasn't very fast, was later used for submarine bombing. I think it was aircraft that was credited with one of the first aircraft destructions of a U-boat. Still a decent plane, but not a B-17. Only 350 of those B-18s were made. And Boeing fortunately survived because they had impressed the military enough with what they had produced. And they literally bet the entirety of their organization on this. That was its own funded program to even develop the B-17. So Boeing almost wasn't even a manufacturer if this hadn't turned around. And the reason it turned around is because a small group of test pilots did something almost embarrassingly simple. They wrote a checklist. Takeoff for flight, landing for taxiing, the obvious steps all included right alongside the easy ones to forget, and all of it fit on a single index card. Pilots flying with that checklist went on to log 1.8 million miles without a serious accident. Gawande cites this in his book, which was written in 2009. I do want to point out that although this is the origin of a checklist, this didn't fix everything overnight. Even after it existed, pilots resisted it. The culture going back to the earliest days of flight was to know the aircraft by memory. And memorization carried real prestige. Skipping the list and trusting your own recall wasn't treated as a shortcut. It was treated as sort of proof that you belonged in the cockpit. One historian's account of this, I think, sums it up in really just three words. Hubris, then accidents. Even the flight manual written for the first production, B-17, barely mentioned checking the flight controls, the very exact thing that killed Hill and Tower. The tool, the checklist, existed, but the instinct to trust memory over the tool took years longer to die. And today, fast forward a significant time to the future, and any of you have been on a commercial flight, you can do this confidently because you understand that the aviation industry is hard-won and eventually enthusiastic adherence to checklists. That's what makes it super safe. Anyone who's ever had a chance to hear pilots in the cockpit running through these things verbally together through seemingly simple things, sometimes other areas, obviously very complex, it's actually really fascinating. While I was researching this, the deepest account of that crash, one of the more recently published articles, the one with the most details that I've pulled for the research in this article, ran from the Air Force magazine. It was in August of 2013. That's the same month I was standing in the nose cone of the B-17 on my 30th birthday. So I hadn't actually been super deeply involved with this portion of the story yet. Having it all kind of converge now, I've rewatched some of the videos from my flight and enjoyed reliving that experience. It was so cool. If you're interested in what that was like, reach out to me. I'll happily talk to you more about that. You've got to take the chance. If you get a ride to ride in one of those old World War II birds, do it. Do it soon. Regulations make it really hard to move around in aircraft these days, too. I don't even know how much you can do. It's time for today's Suck Less Spotlight from Autoflow. Today's spotlight is on Advisor Eye Twitches. Listen, clients like to stay informed throughout the repair process, and studies indicate clients are most satisfied receiving text updates versus phone calls. But call you they will, interrupting everything from estimating to quality conversations and your game of solitaire. That is, unless you text them first using Autoflow. With Autoflow's automated text update, your phone only rings for the right reasons. That way, with less phone interruptions, your eye twitch will definitely suck less. For this and more things that could suck less, visit autoflow.com. Looking to drive more customers to your auto repair shop? Trust ShopDog Marketing to be your reliable companion with AI-powered customer-first marketing, websites, and high-ranking local search. Maximize your reach with our mobile-first and voice search expertise. Car counts are like ice cream. Sweeten your revenue with ShopDog Marketing. Grab our free guide to learn how AI can drive more repair orders every day. Don't miss out on this chance to boost your business. Visit ShopDogMarketing.com. Inbound has exclusively served independent auto repair shops with expert communication solutions for years. Our robust VoIP platform ensures you stay connected, while our industry-leading AI analytics take your business to the next level. We provide the tools you need to understand your customers and optimize every interaction. Choose Inbound for proven expertise and unmatched innovation. Visit callinbound.com and discover the difference we can make. What if you knew exactly what to say to the price shopper, the upset customer, the person who says they cannot afford it? Every day, service advisors lose customers not because of bad service, but because of the wrong words at the wrong moment. Words that work is a free phone scripts playbook built for auto service professionals. Every script includes the reasoning behind it, so you understand not just what to say, but why it works. Grab your free copy at serviceadvisortraining.com. Model 299 story. This is where Gawande actually opens up in his book, The Checklist Manifesto. There's a few other things around that, the chapters leading up into this, but that's one of the first examples he goes into, because How to Get Things Right being the subtitle of the book, this is what we realized was necessary in aviation. And this book, Gawande's book, has become the intellectual backbone for a chunk of what I want to talk about over the next few episodes. And though Gawande's a surgeon and his stories do contain some vivid medical details, his topics in the book span multiple specialties. And his solution checklist applies to literally any system with sufficient complexity. I'm going to encourage you to go pick up that book and read it yourself. It is 100% worth your time, especially if you're listening to this episode and you are in our target audience in the automotive repair industry. So specifically for me, this book, it helped me to define and put to terms some of my own observations within our industry. And it, I feel, offers a glimpse of some solutions that do play well with our communication and leadership topic on this show. So let's jump in to the two ways, according to Gawande, that smart people fail. And I'm going to say this about Hill, the pilot in the Model 299. Fun fact on this as well. I love Ogden, Utah, where our friends at the Institute are based, and they have a little airfield over there. It's actually pretty sizable. Some cool planes flying out of it, and that is named after Hill, that Air Force base out there, right there in Ogden. Pretty neat. So you guys should hopefully feel connected to this story as well. Gawande used a term that I thought was really good, and we made it a title in this episode, and that is necessary fallibility. And it's the acknowledgement that even the most skilled people alive will make mistakes, and that any system built on the assumption they won't is a system waiting to fail, not maybe, but is in fact waiting. So this term, it's not an insult to your service specialists. It's not an insult to me or anyone. It's just a fact. The question was never how to build a repair facility full of people who never get anything wrong. Nobody has built or staffed that facility. The question is what you build around the people you already know going in are fallible. Necessary fallibility takes two shapes. There's two eyes: ignorance or ineptitude. Ignorance, I think we're all familiar with that, is not knowing. You never learn the step, or the knowledge doesn't exist yet. Maybe it was never published or it was never told. For whatever reason, you do not know about a thing that is a risk. Ineptitude, our word of the day, is different and it's harder to accept. It means you knew exactly what to do and you didn't do it. Probably heard it described in one word: human. Humanity is not the only thing. I think our environment compounds our humanity. And when you add pressure, or you've done this exact job 1,000 times, and somewhere around the 900th time, your brain can't recall if you did the thing this time or not, and it imagines you did. Gawande cites this for a simple matter of a doctor gloving and putting a mask on. Literally something as simple as that, where a reminder was necessary because it had become so routine. Now, in our industry, I think we really have made great strides in solving ignorance. Our specialists today are educated, manufacturers publish specs, and yes, most of them are actually available. I know there's rare cases where it feels like a fight to get information, but information is required to be shared and is shared. Information is most often readily available, and AI is rapidly evolving even further to assist with just-in-time information. What we haven't solved is the gap between knowing and doing under routine pressure. And you can probably already sense where verbal checklist are headed in this series. But before we get to some solutions, it's worth seeing where this idea has already been proven twice in fields with even higher stakes than ours. So we'll talk about the evolution of checklists here. Aviation is the best example, and it didn't stop with the B-17. The checklist became so standard that today no commercial flight leaves the gate without one. And that's not tradition for tradition's sake. That's the reason you board a plane without a second thought. And it's not a silent checklist. I got into this back in episode 34 of Pilot Talk, communicating with my CFI. Aviation, we run on acronyms and pilots recite them out loud, even solo. Even with nobody else in the cockpit to hear it, the checklist isn't complete until it's been spoken. And if you want to see that discipline in action, I'm going to encourage you to do this as well. Look up Missionary Bush Pilot on YouTube. Ryan Farran, F-A-R-R-A-N, he has a few books as well, flies into some of the toughest strips in Papua New Guinea, and the verbal discipline is constant even when he's by himself. He eventually built a little product that he uses, and he demonstrates this in a majority of his videos. You'll see it. He calls it the Buddy Check. It's a little toggle switch checklist box for both takeoff and landing. You've got to go watch one of those videos. It is amazing, absolutely amazing, where he has to fly. I find that stuff fascinating. Those of you who've been loyal listeners know that one of my first things I wanted to do when I was still in college was to be a missionary pilot. And I let that dream slide, got back into auto repair, but I still live vicariously through guys like Austin Brumfeld, who's going to Alaska, and then videos like this. They're very fascinating. But this idea of the checklist, this did not stay just in aviation. In the mid-2000s, this is where Gawande's book really focuses, a critical care physician named Peter Pernovost at Johns Hopkins took the same logic into the ICU. He built a 5-step checklist for inserting central lines. These are the catheters that run straight in the major veins. Pretty much goes like this. Wash your hands, clean the skin. That level's basic. At Johns Hopkins, the central line infection rate fell to near zero within about a year. And when the checklist ruled out across ICUs in Michigan, infections dropped just as fast. And over the following year and a half, that one checklist is credited with saving an estimated 1,500 lives and $175 million. And Gawande cites this in his book. So Gawande didn't just write about this. He actually helped lead a study for the World Health Organization. And that took the surgical safety checklist into 8 hospitals across 8 countries, from rural clinics to major medical centers. And complications dropped 36%, deaths dropped 47%. That's cited from Haynes in 2009. Within 18 months, more than 2,000 hospitals worldwide had adopted this checklist. And if you're curious about the evolution on that, again, please pick up Checklist Manifesto. Fantastic read. The same idea, aviation, then medicine. Not because pilots and surgeons are careless people. They're some of the most careful, talented people alive, because necessary fallibility doesn't care about credentials. It shows up everywhere. Complexity exists. It outruns memory. And I don't think automotive service has had its version of this moment quite yet. And that's what the rest of this series will be pushing towards. I'll say this, Gawande spends some real time on why smart, capable people resist a tool that plainly works, even after it's been proven to save lives and money. And I want to read this one straight, no paraphrase, because I think it's a really good quote. This is quoting specifically out of the Checklist Manifesto by Atul Gawande. He says, "We don't like checklists. They can be painstaking. They're not much fun. But I don't think the issue here is mere laziness. There's something deeper, more visceral going on when people walk away, not only from saving lives, but from making money. It somehow feels beneath us to use a checklist, an embarrassment. It runs counter to deeply held beliefs about how the truly great among us, those we aspire to be, handle situations of high stakes and complexity. The truly great are daring. They improvise. They do not have protocols and checklists. Maybe our idea of heroism needs updating." That's end quote from Atul Gawande, Checklist Manifesto, How to Get Things Right, published 2009. That's on page 173. So you'll notice in this that it's not a technology problem. That's an ego problem. And it's the exact same one sitting in every shop I've ever worked in or visited. Here's the piece I keep coming back to. A checklist sitting on a clipboard is easy to ignore. Nobody's watching. DVI, you're performing it solo. But something you say out loud, especially to another person standing next to you, holding you accountable to it, is a different kind of commitment. And you can quietly skip a line on a page or a digital form, but it's a lot harder to quietly skip a sentence you were supposed to speak to another individual. And that's where this series is headed. Not just checklists, verbal ones. So I want you to picture your own bay for a second. The walk around before a car ever goes on the lift, the write up when the tech is handing findings to an advisor, the moment a digital inspection actually gets built out line by line, every one of those is a place where something spoken carries more weight than something typed in alone, and where memory and hubris are just as likely to sneak in as they were for Hill and Tower in that Model 299 flight. So where's this going? This is part one of a short series. Ignorance or ineptitude is today's piece. Down the road, I want to talk about a third failure mode our industry must also confront. We'll even tie in new technologies like AI, voice dictation, and then model context protocols. And we're going to also have a lot of fun with those things and these concepts that I'll cite from Gawande's highly excellent book. I do hope you will pick that one up yourself. It's going to help you see where I'm going. And for those of you very interested in aviation, I strongly encourage Missionary Bush Pilot YouTube channel from Ryan Farron. You have to see some of those videos and where he uses his buddy check system. It's just that easy system of toggle switches, and he runs through them with those physical toggles. He speaks through them as he flips each one during the startup and landing sequences. And aside from that, I think he just has some amazing videos of some very challenging approaches that he faces out there in Papua New Guinea. So I have multiple sources for this episode. I will have them cited in our show notes. It took some research on this stuff and some good reading sessions. I have a lot more terms to bring in, but thank you so much for listening to this piece. And thank you for listening to the other shows on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. If you have the app, please listen there. If you do not, please go to arpn.app and download that free app. And then you can listen to Remarkable Results Radio with Carm Capriato, Diagnosing the Aftermarket, A through Z with Matt Fonslow, Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest, the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast with Brian and Kim Walker, and the Weekly Blitz with Coach Chris Cotton. And hey, I appreciate hearing from you on anything that helps or suggestions on topics you'd like to hear us discuss on the show or something you would like to discuss on the show with me. Email me here, speakup@craigoneal.net. I will love to hear from you. Now, thank you once again to our sponsors, David Boyd, pilot himself from Call Inbound, Dan Vance from Shop Dog Marketing, Jerry Frank from ServiceAdvisorTraining.com, and of course, Chris Cloutier with our team at AutoFlow. We appreciate all of you, our listeners. Now get out there, listen up, speak up, check up the list. We'll talk soon.
You've been listening to Speak Up, Effective Communication with Craig O'Neill on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com because the best conversations in the industry start here. Check the show notes for Craig's YouTube channel and email. Let him know what topics you'd like him to speak up about.